Socially intro? Yes. So what episode number is this?
Number 3.
So I'm taking direction from the teenager again. Welcome to episode 3 of Keto Chapters by Keto Fitness Club. Wow, how random is this? And actually, special guest. Actually, no, it's just a guest. He's not special at all. our special guest today is Mr. Sandy Vara.
Hi,
oh,
mate.
Jesus.
you could call me that.
Yeah, that's right.
with the amount of water I'm drinking. Thanks, mate.
Your skin is glowing, though. Your skin is glowing. Underneath that grey beard, your skin is glowing. Actually, you do seem to have got a lot greyer in the last sort of 6 months.
That's because I shave a lot. Don't shave as much as I used to.
All right.
Yeah. It's not great, it's silver. But anyway. Thanks for having me. Thanks for allowing me to come into your world.
Into the. This is the only room that most people think that we have in the house. they never see anything else.
So I know. I actually asked. The door opened earlier, and I went, "You have another room."
The ground floor goes a bit further.
You have a front room, and Evan, you had normal stuff.
Yeah.
Then Mark's reply was, "We don't actually go in.
We don't go in there. That's. Yeah, it smells of teenage boy, and that's about it." Anyway, what are you doing here?
Well, you invited me to talk about how we met and all that stuff.
Oh.
And literally tell the world of the beginnings of everything, really.
So let's do a quick intro. Me and Sandy met at a networking event. It's actually only just over a year ago. It does feel like a lifetime ago, but it was only just over a year ago. And I suppose we should give Denise Peasgood a quick shout out because she's the one that actually sort of got us together.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
so
Denise,
the groom man is her business. Maybe we need to get in touch, get some skincare off her.
You do. I'm all right.
All right, thanks. honestly, this is why we don't class him as a friend. actually, no, Denise sort of obviously met you at another networking event, didn't she? Where were you? Where were
Leicester.
You networking? Right, okay.
The lovely, funny town of Leicester. Right, that's where she came along to. And so, I stood out like a sore thumb, would you believe it? Being the only Asian guy in the room.
How bizarre. So anyway, we got introduced. We started talking food and obviously...
Well, no, it wasn't. It was really weird because Denise said you must go to a for networking meeting. So obviously I rocked up with my sunglasses as always. It was a lovely sunny day. Got lost.
Ella, can you put a little jingle in that?
rubbish.
And obviously rocked up. And obviously with networking, people just gave me, you've got to meet this chap and you've got to meet this lady and you've got to meet such and such. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. Rocked up, turned up. Didn't really... introduce myself to you because you were already kind of like speaking to different people, and to be quite honest, I was quite intimidated, to be honest. I never told you this. Because you were quite with a t-shirt, you looked really, you're like the guy that you could just tell that you were the one of, you wouldn't just jump in the car like I would to go and get some milk from the shop. You'd be the guy that would run to the shop. So I was already intimidated.
Sainsbury's is only across the road. I don't have to run far.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, here we go. And then the best bit was I was showing, and I'll still never forget this. You were talking to someone and I was on the other side. And I'll never forget the look you gave me. So I was showing someone a video.
Oh.
And it was one of those moments where you just, you know, like when you just think, what are you doing? So again, I don't really care. It doesn't bother me. I upset everyone. So I was showing someone a video and it happened to be on really loud and I didn't mean to be. I do know that you need to turn it down a little bit. And it was playing a video and I was showing somebody something and it was so loud and Mark's face just turned to me like, turn that effing video down. I'm trying to talk to someone. That was the look he gave me and I was like, I kind of put my head down. I went, sorry, mate. I've turned it down a bit. and then we obviously introduced ourselves.
So we actually had a one-to-one on that occasion, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We did sit down and actually had a one-to-one. And having never met each other prior to that one-to-one, we suddenly realised we had so many things in common.
Unbelievable. It's still to this day, new stuff that what Mark talks to me about, I go, really? I've done that as well. It's like he's been following me around, right? Like my shadow over the last 30 years. I'm not going to say the real number.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's even down to the style of restaurant we had. It's unbelievably spooky.
So obviously we had a connection because we were both talking about food.
Mm.
Coming from slightly different angles, but we were still both talking about food at the networking events. So you were there to sort of promote sort of the use of spices.
Well, to be quite honest, I literally came up with the brand of Spice Guy. Yeah, I mean, I just came up with this idea. I just literally left the pub world.
I was going to say, let's go back a little bit then.
Okay.
You finished in pubs to go Spice Guy, but where had you started from?
So right, let's go rewind.
Let's go back to...
You need to do that.
Yeah.
Ella, can you do that hazy thing?
No, she's not doing that.
Then we go back into
Need Zach here. So suddenly Zach and Louis talking now.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? That's a great idea. Little Spice and little Keto. Oh, that would be fantastic.
That would be
really good. Because Zach... And you know what? And so is Zach. Have you seen the videos? He's standing next to me. And I'm like, oh my God. Because he listens in, you know, and corrects me every now and then. But anyway, going back in time. So long story short, I literally grew up in Manchester and I wanted to be in hotels. That's why I fell in love with hotels.
I grew up in Manchester and wanted to do exactly the same.
Yeah, you were in Cheetham Hill.
Yeah.
And I was in Longside.
Yeah.
And it's really ironic. I lived in a white Irish community, right? And his shop was in a predominantly Asian area.
Yeah.
So just for the record, he's actually more Indian than I am, okay, for the record. But grew up in Manchester, fantastic time. Great stories I could possibly tell you, but we'll go into that another time. Mm. And just literally fell in love with hospitality as we know it. The days of the hotels being king.
This is what I said on one of the last podcasts, is that when I, that gap between year one, year two at college and going doing the work experience, I didn't really learn a huge amount in year one, but went to the Imperial in Torquay and spent 6 weeks there and learned so much and fell in love with the whole idea of working in hospitality.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where I didn't want to go back to college.
Nope.
I wanted to stay there. And the second I was finished year two, straight back down.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, college was no longer important to us. It was just wanted to get in. You know, we're both saying we just want to get involved in stuff, don't we? We want to get sort of making stuff, you know.
Well, to be again, because of my ethnicity, we were always pushed to do, you must go university, you must do this, you must get a degree, you must be a doctor, da 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 da. So obviously to keep my folks happy, I went and did the management side.
Me too.
The Indian in me rose to the surface because I thought to myself, yeah, why not be a manager? Why not run the places? Which kind of makes sense. And in a nutshell, that's how the Spice Guy was born, because I wasn't happy in my work. I went and worked for corporate places. It wasn't the hotels that I fell in love with.
Yeah.
At the Crown Plaza, Midland, where I was literally, how far away were we?
Less than 200 yards. We worked together on the same street. Worked on the same street at the same time in the sort of, was it the early 90s?
Yeah, but I'll be in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, early 90s.
Well, I was there. I was at the Crown Plaza doing my work experience.
And I was at the Charter House, literally just down the road, running the place. Wow. I was the manager at that point.
I wasn't. I was still at college. Don't forget. I was still a whippersnapper.
I was actually only early 20s.
And but going back to that though, you know all the nighttime classes that were, because you always get the opportunity, they go up on the board at college. Do you want to do a wine tasting? Do you want to do this? And nobody else would do it. I was the only one that did all the extracurricular classes. But you want to know why? I've never told anybody this. This is top secret. Yeah. Nobody knows this. The thing was, on the top floor was a hairdressing.
Right.
For all the girls that used to do the hairdressing.
Okay.
So I would go up there before my class for do baking or wine or anything like that. But then I learned how to wash hair and braid and cut. And yeah, because obviously they were all girls. And I had to wait around for 2 hours before my nighttime class would start.
Okay.
So I would go and chat to them. And then they go, why don't you sign up? I went, all right then. So, yeah, nobody ever knows that.
Why did you go to Blackpool when you were living in Manchester? Why did you go to
because Bolton College? Because, well, Bolton College was allegedly a decent catering college, yeah. BMC, Bolton Metropolitan yeah. College. It's now just Bolton College.
Okay.
They took the M out.
Why did you never consider Salford, where I went?
Did. But a
great, great catering facilities.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
There was actually four university college type places that I was going to go.
Yeah.
But obviously, Bolton was very affiliated with Blackpool in the Fylde because theoretically, it is the best catering college in the country.
Yeah.
Theoretically, just like to mention that. Secondly, was going to be the Toast Rack in Manchester.
Yeah.
But I thought I was too close to home. I want to get away. Third was Salford. And fourth was Henley at Coventry.
Oh, wow.
I went to Coventry. It was a right dump. See why Hitler bombed it. But anyway, sorry.
Actually, again, there's one of the areas that I had a hotel in Coventry. There are some nice parts of Coventry.
Yeah.
There are some nice parts.
Yeah. Okay.
But I know what you mean. Right, so prior to you being the Spice Guy, mm-hmm. this actually it's weird because I'm listening to a book at the moment called The Alter Ego. Is it your alter ego, or is Sandivara the alter ego?
I think Sandivara is the alter ego.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think the Spice Guy is actually who you really are.
Yeah, it's
weird. You've just had to find that that outlet.
Yes, it's like Superman and Clark Kent. Just put a pair of glasses on. That's it.
Which is exactly the point. Which one of those two is the alter ego?
It has to be Sandivara.
No. As in Superman and Clark Kent.
Oh, it's Clark Kent.
It's Clark Kent. Yes.
Yeah. Because in essence, he arrived as Superman.
Yes, exactly.
And he had to disguise himself.
So you've always been the Spice Guy. You've just had to find the right vehicle.
Yeah. Yep.
To show it.
To show it. Yeah. And food. And
because it just goes back to sort of what you were doing prior to Spice Guy, i.e. working in corporate. You were still Sandivara.
Yep.
You just weren't very happy, Sandivara.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, if you speak to any of my friends and any work colleagues, I was always different in everywhere I went. I looked at things very differently. So, even I was speaking to an old friend the other day and going to Blackpool College or Bolton College, I would question everything. Yeah, especially for example, when it came to like cooking ethnic food, and when I saw them making rice, I went, "My mum doesn't do it like that." So then the French chef was saying, "This is how we do rice pilaf. We have the stock, we have the onions. This is how we do it." But there are other ways, you know.
Yeah.
So it was always, it was never found myself. Even sitting in a lecture room, so we'd go in a lecture room, and the lecture room would be literally hundreds of people on the left, hundreds of people on the right. And I would walk in and everybody would be sat on the right-hand side. I'd go sit on my own because I didn't like people. Well, that was as well. But I felt I could take in more sitting on my own out of the way. And it didn't bother me being the lone ranger. Right. Like I didn't care that I wasn't sitting with the norm. And that kind of like, again, slowly come through with everything that I'd done. And I think that's the reason why you and I have got this amazing bond and the food, and I get it.
Obviously, when we met and I started talking keto, your eyes glazed over and you're like, I have literally no idea what you're on about. You know, the fact that I sort of said, I don't eat rice. No response. I don't eat bread. And it's like, what the hell?
What vegetable is
this? Oh, that was hilarious. However, when we started to sort of like talk more and I looked at your food and I was like, you do realize that what you're producing is effectively keto low carb. Because again, it comes back to the reason why you do what you do. You're introducing people to spices and how to use them properly. Because guess what? We've forgotten. And we've wrapped everything in sugar for the last 40 years and pretended that that's flavor. So once we as keto start taking sugar out of our diet, and you need to make food interesting. Mm. We all want to eat interesting food. I've not eaten yet today, so I'm trying to work out what I'm going to make me for breakfast. he's going to make me something in a minute. But it's sort of, you know, your food was already without you even knowing about it, what you were trying to show people was already so in sync with what we do anyway.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, my journey just started when I met you as well. It was still very, very new. I'm still learning what I'm doing and finding myself and realizing what it is I'm actually offering, because it was still a very, well, it still is to this day.
Yeah, well, we're all the same. I mean, when I first started talking about what I'm doing, it was just to try and help people, just to try and spread the word.
Yep.
Wasn't sure how going to do that. Mm. And it's the same. You were turning up at networking events with spices, trying to talk about how to use them. Mm. There was no, you weren't actually trying to sort of, I said to you, so what are you selling? I don't know. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. I haven't got anything to sell. I was like, okay, so maybe there's a hole in your business there. But you were just wanting to show people how to use them properly.
And it goes to, do you remember, you know, all those sayings with other business coaches? Because we get to meet hundreds of business coaches. If you're not keto, or if you're not into health and fitness or whatever you want to call it, you must be a business coach, right? Everyone's a business coach. And I genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, and this is no BS, that cliche, do something you love.
Yes. Yeah.
And my family, seriously, and my brothers and sisters, everybody, just don't get it.
A lot of people don't get what we do, or, you know, they won't get the idea that we sort of, you know, we run an online business helping people with, you know, with their food. Mm. That's it. Understanding about what they're eating. Mm. You know, it is hard for some people to sort of visualize not having a normal job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was always wanted to be self-employed in some capacity. I also wanted to do something that I enjoyed. Again, that's why we open restaurants.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so
that's
exactly
why we both open restaurants.
We both wanted to play with food. We both wanted to serve other people and see their enjoyment in eating food.
Oh.
I mean, and that's, and again, I think that comes back to what you do and what we're doing now together, is that we want people to enjoy food, real food.
Yep.
Not be scared of, there is never a mistake. It's just sort of like, it's just the way you'll make your curry today. Yeah. It might be slightly different to the way you make your curry tomorrow.
And you know what I love? Somebody said to me the other day, you're a feeder, aren't you? And I went, no, I love, do you know what? This is really weird, isn't it? And you could put it in some weird fetish if you want to put it down to this. I could have a restaurant, right? And everybody's dining. And you know, the clink of the cutlery, the glassware, the noise of the restaurant. You know what? To me, it's one of the most beautiful.
It's the one thing that I miss.
And you know what? Watching those faces and genuinely asking, did you enjoy your meal? And somebody says to you, that was fantastic. There's not a feeling like it.
No.
There's not a feeling like it.
I mean, actually sort of like, you know, standing at the door as people are leaving at the end of the night saying thank you for, you know, thank you for, and you know, getting sort of whatever compliments you get as people are leaving. It's like, that's exactly why I do it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but then the world.
Because working in those sort of environments, you'd easily work 17, 18 hours a day, every day.
Yeah.
You know, the podcast that we did a few weeks ago, so I said about sort of the restaurant that I had, you know, I've lived in Northamptonshire area now since 1993, 94. You know, a lot of people came to that restaurant. They would know me, you know, and I worked there every day for sort of 7 years, effectively, you know, for, again, 16, 18 hours every single day. So almost every single customer I would have said hello to.
Wow. The thing is, and we need to tell this to people. Right, so I'm going to tell you about my restaurant. Okay, my restaurant was called Cinnamon Red. Of course it was Cinnamon Red. And the concept came along about how I could make the guest's journey even better than what it was. It was actually born from my dissertation at Hotel Catering Institutional Operational Management, which I do hold a BA honours in, ladies and gentlemen. And from there, after doing my first...
I'm just wondering what the A stands for, because I know what the B stands for.
Bachelor of Arts, not arse. And I knew you were going with that one. And and the idea was to make the restaurant, how we could make it more, I hate these news, better, but how the guest journey could be on a different level. So the only way to do it was I took four different concepts that I came up with, and I needed to get the guest. And again, they are a guest. You've got to use the word guest. And it was to take an idea of getting them in the kitchen, but obviously we couldn't get them in the
kitchen.
I couldn't get a guest into the kitchen because we break every single rule. But even though I never had a problem with anybody wanting to walk in my kitchen, never had a problem with it. So what I did was I put the...
The idea that it's sort of like kitchens are now very open plan.
Yeah.
And people can see what's going in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that in 1994.
It's been there since it, done it?
Yeah.
And then I moved the kitchen outside. That was the first step. Then I took a concept from Pizza Express, Tiger Lil's, and obviously McDonald's. Okay, not the food. I loved the concept of the... And I even wrote a thesis on this. The McDonaldization of society.
Okay.
How they made us pick up, buy our food, and then the wrappers, we put it on. They class themselves as a restaurant,
still
to this day.
Yeah.
But guess what? We clear our own plates and put them in the receptacles. Yeah.
And there's no cutlery.
And there's no cutlery. That's called the McDonaldization of society.
Right.
But there's a whole, I could talk to you about that and make you bored.
Yeah,
if you want to go, sleep ever, we can talk about it.
I'd do a podcast.
So with that, I basically, straight away, concept was people choose their ingredients. They chose it. It was cooked in front of them by my chefs. I trained the chefs to make a dish within 4 minutes, 35 seconds from the ingredients they chose. And that was called Cinnamon Red.
God, it took you that long to cook a dish. wow, 4 minutes. So what year did you start that?
The year was September 2001.
Right. So in July 2001... my restaurant closed down. Wonder where you got that idea from. Sort of like just 4 months later, you're opening. Because in my restaurant, the customer created their own food and handed it to a chef who cooked it inside the restaurant for them. And it was done in a lot quicker time than 4 minutes. In fact, if anything, I'd love to get Liam, one of my grill chefs, which we're obviously friends on Facebook. He could on a griddle, get 20 to 30 different dishes.
Really?
Cooking at that. He was absolutely, he still works in catering. He runs a catering unit somewhere in Northampton. He was one of the best grill chefs I have ever seen.
Really?
And he was a teenager. He was an 18-year-old lad. He was fabulous. 4 minutes for one dish. He would have been strung out. Come on, get on with it.
Wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Let me explain why it was 4 minutes. Because again, you chose your raw ingredients, right? And I always recommend you check. You always chose up to three ingredients. We'll get to the three later on. I think we're too early for that just now. And they chose the ingredients. They chose the oils. They chose the sauces.
Check.
And then they got to taste it.
I think I need to go and find a lawyer and sort of. Actually sort of see if I can do some sort of claim against this. You ripped my restaurant off.
And then the guests...
Did you come into my restaurant?
Never.
You must have done.
And then the guests would taste it, and then they were able to make any changes there. And again, a lot of guest interaction.
Yeah.
And then it was presented to the guests.
Honestly. He's pretending that this was his idea.
And then the guest even got to choose the garnish. The garnish! You could have...
Oh, there's the difference. Do you know what? Ella talked about this yesterday when we were talking about sort of like the book cover. We'll talk about that in a second. And she said, what I need is a picture of Sandy doing sort of like the garnish for something. She said, and you just in the background growling. That's the difference between... See, there you go. There was your niche.
Yeah.
You garnished the dish.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
I garnished it. And we would... And again, it was garnished in a different way. We would have about 7-8 different varieties of garnish. This is the beauty. People say, are you an Indian restaurant? I would, no, I'm not an Indian restaurant. I was a restaurant that served Indian food.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Yeah.
And nobody could get it. In Leicester, saying that to an Indian person, their head would blow up. And it did.
So that was the reason why I was sort of like about £10 ahead and you were £100 ahead, because you put that little flick of...
Are you £10 ahead?
Yeah.
Mate, I'm gonna blow you out of the water here. Yeah. This is where the business knowledge was out. I wasn't... lunch was $7.99 ahead, and I put it up to $8.99 for evening.
Wow.
So I still think it was still cheap.
All right. Tenner was the average. We had one, and we were going random now, but we had one night, was called Monday Night Madness, which was $7.95.
Okay.
And it was filled with students.
Right.
100 covers, right. All students. Eat as much as you want for $7.95. But then, weekends, it was double that. It was 15 quid.
Like, you're going to love this, right? Yeah, and Ella's going to absolutely die in it. She might just pause it for laughter, right? You don't know what happened, right? So we would have fire alarms in the restaurant, okay?
Right.
Okay, so you imagine there's a four... I designed the wok burners. It was four wok
burners. Right. Oh, you used woks, did you?
Yeah, woks,
right,
darling. Okay. We didn't have a griddle.
Right, okay. Four woks. Yeah, make sure you get close to the microphone, otherwise you're going to...
So four woks with running water all the way around, so the guests would literally hand you the dish.
Okay.
Okay? Now, obviously, with my method of cooking,
yeah.
Okay, everything was red hot. The oil would be hot.
Yeah.
It'd be hot. And obviously...
Yeah.
And my slogan was called the fire karai. And I would intentionally do flames. Hear me out here.
Yeah.
So I taught the chef and my brother and myself taught that when we start off the dish, right, we put the oil in the pan
and then we set it on fire.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Now, trust me, we could do about 20, 30 covers at one time, but trust me, when it got up to 70, yes, the fire alarms would go off.
Yeah.
I have had to evacuate my restaurant a couple of times. And so, there was one time that we actually thought that the building was on fire because there was that much smoke.
Wow.
That was only because I took a table of 70. I said, yeah, we can do it. Yeah, we can do it. No problem.
Yeah.
We should just had a break in between.
The thing is, you do that and you go, oh, we'll just work it out on the night.
Yeah.
Christ.
But it was fun. But that's, I guess that's how, again, the similarities on in every way. But where the similarity ends.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. We're about to get there. We're about to get to the absolute crucial difference between Sandy Vara and Mark Brayton.
The end is that you are a lot more clinical and you...
No, I'm a true mank. I'm getting to that bit.
Are you getting back to that?
Oh, you know what? We're not going any further in this conversation without...
Okay, go on then.
I took a little break, refill coffee and water, and the boy came down, made himself a goat's cheese and ham wrap. Not a wrap, he just wrapped some goat's cheese in some ham and then went off again.
Very nice.
As we said, the only time Louis ever sort of ventures into this half of the house is when he comes to get food.
He doesn't
do anything else. So we were about to talk about sort of the main difference between us, other than sort of heritage. And it confuses the bejesus out of me, to be fair, as to why, when somebody who grew up in central Manchester...
Long sight.
All right, mate.
Right, mate.
When he first told me this, well, I'm still in shock from it, really.
I get it.
So, let's get onto it. I'm a true blue, having lived...
I'm born and bred Mancunian, very proud to be Manc.
And I was quite prepared to continue to talk to you when you turn round and say, well, I'm from the red side of the city. But then you absolutely floored me when you said...
Which city?
Because it's not the red side of Manchester.
As I was telling you earlier, that I don't conform to the norm, and obviously do what I feel is right for me. I'm a massive, massive Liverpool fan. I can't, it's in my blood.
Which has made the last sort of like, well, year. Sort of like 12 months or so, 14 months or so that we've known each other, actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because at the top of the table have been
Liverpool Man City. Yeah.
With City taking it last year and Liverpool taking it this year.
Absolutely.
So he had to sort of suck it up last year when...
Oh, I was so gutted last year. So gutted last year. It was on the same feeling of when the Gerrard slip. It's the same feeling.
Yeah.
But, and it's again, irony has it, right? Again, going back to this, the day that I realised that I shouldn't support Liverpool was the day I had a massive food moment.
Was it?
Okay. I don't know what year it was. I was about 12 years old, just literally left primary school, I think. Or I could have been still at primary school. Yeah, I still was at primary school. And in them days, you'd have a party, wouldn't you? You'd have a party and you'd go down to the working man's club. You know?
A
couple of jubblies and all that.
Panda Pop. The dogs come to join us.
A couple of panda pops, that kind of styley. that kind of club that we would go to. And it was always known that when you ever went to a party of that kind of ilk, you would take along some food. So obviously, me living in Manchester, and we had a corner shop, would you believe it?
Where was your corner shop?
Longside.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, okay. Corner shop. And it was in a massive Irish community. And I was invited to a party, Howard Reeves' party. Now, Howard Reeves was his mother and grandmother were the dinner ladies at school.
Right.
So, again, the food memories that I have, is hence why I am going to be writing my own little book, which I'll talk about another time, which where the food memories that I have is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. So I got invited to a Howard's birthday party. No, it wasn't Howard's, it was his cousin or somebody. And we went to this working man's club, and we were told that bring your own food, bring some food if you want. So obviously my mother got wind of this.
Talking of food, keep talking. I'm going to put that bread in the oven.
Yeah, go for it. So my mother got wind of this to bring some food. And as every Indian woman out there knows, that anytime there's a party, then obviously the pakoras, the bhajis, the samosas get made. Obviously. So you can imagine I was a really massive big hit at this party, just like I'm a really big hit with, I was never bullied at school because my mother used to give 10p mixes to every kid that would come by. I used to have millions of mates, they all hated me, by the way. They all hated me, but in front of
10p
my
mix.
Yeah, 10p mix. Yeah.
And did you have the half penny tray as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Damn right. You sell fags as well. 10p each.
Teenager over there's going, what the hell? Half penny.
Yeah, come into my dad's shop and you could buy a single. Remember singles? Underneath the cattle was Embassy Number One, B&H, Regal, all open.
I don't just remember singles. I remember selling singles as a 12, 13-year-old in the shop. Yeah? Oh. Yeah, how things have changed.
How things have changed, singles. Oh, God. So, went along to this party. I'm in hand, samosas in hand, and I was such, I went down a storm. Obviously, in them days, the shop was referred to as P-A-K-I. Yeah. I didn't say just in case I may offend somebody. No. And it was never an issue. And they all said to me, oh, you're the lad from that shop. Not a problem. Yeah. Fantastic. So it got around to the buffet. So I had to go and put my mum's samosas on the buffet table.
Right.
Still to this day, I will never forget the George, it was similar to when the first time I came to your house and ate food.
And ate keto stuff.
Yeah, ate keto. Jaw dropped.
Yeah.
Paper plates. I'd never seen paper plates before in my life. Round paper. And then I saw cheese on a stick.
With pineapple.
And then pineapples.
I was like,
sausages. And the one that blew my mind were these little animals. Little animals made hedgehogs.
I never got that.
I was like, I was in awe. I had never seen anything like it. And the sandwich, the array of sandwiches. Oh. You go to an Indian buffet, completely different. Completely different. So anyway, so I'm sat at the table with all the family, all the uncles.
Yeah.
All the uncles. So I'm having my food moment. Now it's time to have another moment. So I'm sat there, we're all eating away. And again, you used to have the usual conversation that I would have in the 80s and the 90s. And even in the year 2000, to be quite honest, it's really great. Which usually is, I really like curry.
I really like curry.
I like you. It goes, I like you. I even like curry. So you just know this conversation is going to be brilliant. So they're eating my samosas and everyone's chit-chatting away about football. All the uncles are talking about football. And in them days, and I'm not just saying this, everyone was a Man City fan. I very rarely bumped into a Man United fan.
See, we were surrounded by Man United fans.
No, I was
absolutely surrounded
by all Man City. Don't forget, my school was near Main Road.
Yeah, true. So you would be.
Yeah, Main Road. Odd one or two Man United fans.
But
then I always, as a kid, I got confused between Manchester United and Man U.
Yeah.
I really thought there was four teams in Manchester. Manchester United, Man U, Manchester City,
Salford City now.
Yeah. So obviously everyone's talking about football, talking about who they support. And you can imagine I'm the talk of the table because everyone's loving the curry.
Mm.
Which it wasn't curry, it was bloody samosas. And obviously all the kids loved me because obviously mum, again, gave me a lot of 10p mixes to take along with me.
The original party bag.
The original party. Yes.
It was the original party bag. It was also eco-friendly. Well, it would have been damn sight more because none of the sweets were wrapped.
No. All put in a paper bag.
All put in a paper bag.
That had a jagged edge to it. Yeah, I don't know why it had a jagged edge to it.
Yeah, it's quite weird. Yeah, and it, you know, no wastage afterwards.
10p mix.
Yeah, now party bags, are, I mean, you know, when the kids were out there.
£3.50, aren't they?
Well, but it's just full of plastic, isn't it? Sorry, two old men talking about sort of the 70s, 80s. Sorry.
And so the Man City, going around the table and they're talking about all the team and what they're doing. Got around to me. And obviously, as a 8, 9, whatever age I was, I can't remember, I decided to proclaim to the table that I supported Liverpool. The table went silent. Silent, Mark. And this is irony, right? So think about this in this. So an Indian guy, kid, sitting amongst a load of Mancunians, right? Theoretically, I was a Mancunian as well. I was accepted for everything. There was no colour wasn't brought into it. My ethnicity wasn't brought into it. I was just the kid who brought the samosas along and everyone loved me.
Yeah.
They loved me. All the uncles got up. They got up and they pointed at me. One of them pointed at me and says, "You need to realise where you've effing come from." Not Pakistan or India, that I came from Manchester and I insulted the whole table. How mad is that? And that's the beauty of food and
you've
football.
You've been insulting people on a regular basis
ever
from
since,
that point on.
Ever since. But my family weren't into football. It was only three of us that were into football. And at that time, unfortunately, media, Liverpool were winning everything. Hmm. So I had no choice. I had to support Liverpool and then only realised that I couldn't. So there you go.
Anyway.
But if I were to tell you the story of what I tell people why I support Liverpool, I think we'll save that one for another day.
That is a hilarious story when you do sort of trip it out. Right, so
we've lost our train of thought.
We haven't actually, but it always has to come right round to sort of that one thing, because there's one thing that divides us, which is football, but there's one thing that gets us together, which is food.
Yeah,
always,
without
a
doubt.
Sandy sort of just sort of mentioned that. We got you round here for dinner, didn't we?
Yeah.
Again, it probably was about a year ago now, maybe, or something like that. And he's having never tried anything in the vein of a low-carb sort of keto sort of style. We invited him round for dinner. Brought his lovely partner with him, Viola. Hello, Viola. Yeah. And we made you pizza and deep fried chicken and...
I still actually have the pictures of that
day. Cheesecake and I can't think what else.
Oh, I remember the chocolate pudding.
Was it?
Yeah. Chocolate pudding, which Louis made. He was showing off. He'd come out of his room.
Yeah, come out of his room.
For one moment.
And it was priceless. The picture on your face that when we gave you a pizza and said, well, it's not real pizza. It's fathead pizza. And it just blew your head, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then
from that moment, Viola became full keto. I didn't. I didn't become full keto because just didn't feel I needed to. I didn't.
Of course. And then it was another random conversation around this table, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was again. I wouldn't say I was 80. I think it's wrong to even use this word 80%.
Yeah. You dropped some carbs, but you were still.
Yeah. I was enjoying the moment. I was enjoying the beauty of real food.
Hmm.
And it was only until I came here one day and I hadn't eaten and you did a blood test on me and my sugar was high, was ridiculously high. And no, I wouldn't say ridiculously high.
It was higher than it should be.
Yeah.
And one thing to note is that within your family and obviously it's an issue within sort of the whole sort of the
Southeast Asia, yeah.
Yeah.
Indian, Pakistani, Bangladesh, without a doubt.
Diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite prevalent in your family, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
You're either a Man City supporter or you're diabetic. That's what you are.
And it was a little bit of a shock, wasn't it, when I sort of said, look, your sugars are...
I shit myself.
Are higher than...
I ain't gonna lie to you.
Yeah, are higher than they should be. Yep. And you probably need to start thinking about some lifestyle changes because going down the lines of where you were, and all right, you know, you were opening a new business and sort of busy, but without actually looking after yourself, the business would suffer anyway. You know, you can only put, we know that, we can only put, you try and put everything you can into the business. But if you're not feeling great about yourself and you're feeding yourself rubbish, then it's sort of...
Just quick disclaimer, not medical advice. When you took bloods.
Oh, no, it was, yeah. Okay, yeah. We just used a standard blood glucose monitor, which I have at home. And I was...
You were never officially diagnosed.
Oh, no.
No, never diagnosed. We sort of...
On the basis of my dad being diabetic, my mum, the fact that every single other person in my family is diabetic, it only kind of like made sense, didn't
it? Yeah, yeah. So it's probably fair to say that you did go home and make a few more changes.
Massively. I mean, obviously, the next day I checked it. I rang the bit I would never forget. I says, Mark, I've just checked this this morning, and it's, I can't remember the figures. And you went, shit, that's high. Exact words, shit, that's
high. I think
that's
what I said to you, what did you eat last night? I've not eaten for like, I was like, holy crap. I think you might need to start thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah, I did. And then the rest is pretty much history. January kicked in, made some massive changes. I did enjoy Christmas, eating and drinking what I needed to, what I thought there's no point trying to even not bother. And January, bang, hit the ground running. And every month, my body, my lifestyle changes. I mean, even when I came along here a few weeks ago.
Well, yeah, because obviously there's been a gap that we haven't been able to sort of like to sort of see each other properly. But we obviously, at the beginning of the year, we were doing workshops together. So we've been doing our sort of what were Couch to Keto workshops. We then wanted sort of to introduce a next level of workshop, which was more about how to use spices to, again, create really quick, simple dishes. Mm. Again, talking about real food and how you can create a meal for one or a meal for, you know, a banquet for many, but using sort of real flavor. So you started to come along with us to do what we called Keto and Spice.
Yep.
Keto and Spice events. And we had, again, we had loads planned all the way through March, April,
May,
June.
We did.
Which obviously we had to can for a little while, which meant then meant that we only spoke to each other via Zoom to sort of talk about sort of future plans. So when you turned up here, was it last week, week before, whatever it was?
Yeah.
I was like, holy crap, you got a chin. You got a chiseled chin.
It's unbelievable.
And your body shape has changed dramatically.
Can you really seriously?
Yeah, oh, massively, massively. Your body shape has, I mean, you've still got chicken legs. I mean, we literally need to do something about your lower half.
You need
to go running.
Do you know what? You know,
But your torso, your sort of like your stomach, your shoulder, you've shrank. You've shrank a lot. I don't know. You probably never took measurements, did you?
No, like an idiot, didn't.
Yeah.
But the muscle that I'm rehabbing, like the other day, obviously, Viola says, my God, you're back.
Because so you started to do a little bit of working out as well. But you don't work out like anybody else does.
No.
Let's just put it this way. Sandy doesn't do normal stuff. Ever. So your working out now is skipping to Rocky.
So you put Rocky on and I'm a whole different beast. It's like, it's my thing. And I've learned to skip again. So I'm skipping. I'm literally weight training and following what I have a huge hammer. If you ever watched Creed, Creed 2.
I was going to go back to sort of like the Rocky when he fought the Russian.
Four.
You know, and he sort of was in the snow and sort of like chopping wood. And all that. This is you, isn't it now?
Yep.
This is you in the middle of Leicester with a sledgehammer.
Yep.
And
just using what was around me. So the in the house, there's a like a little area. I can't describe it as an area. It's more of this piece of wood hanging off. And I'm literally, I watched Will Smith do this chin-up thing. And again, not your conventional chin-up. He'd had his arms spread. If you can try and describe this, Mark. It's like
it's a wide arm grip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, let me see what I can do. Let me see. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I did six straight away.
Wow.
Six. And then when the pain kicks in, guess what I say to myself? Go on. Have a guess. Foot Rocky Four.
No, I can't remember.
No pain. And I'm angering myself. No pain. Come on, you can do this. And if anyone was to walk by the lounge after I'd done my videos, so I did my video live, and then the lights would go off, and I literally have the start of the music and everything. Yeah, yeah. And it just got me going. I'm doing push-ups. I'm doing skipping. And it's the same thing for business, to sort your mind out. And yeah, don't do regularly every single day.
It's amazing how just that bit of exercise, I bet once you've done it, I bet you, A, not only feel great, but your brain's buzzing, isn't it? You're just ready to go.
I'm ready to go. Ready to go.
So, and the nice thing is, obviously, you're trying to obviously help out your family as well with a change of lifestyle. I know there's frustrations because it's something that they've done for years and years, eating a certain way.
And I thought I cracked it.
Yeah, I know, it's always hard trying to help family because you want to do it. You really, really want to get them to sort of make changes.
It's like, you know, you hear these stories about people that come across something and they want to, and they genuinely want to spread the word and say,
I've been
given a God, if you believe in God, if you're a God-fearing person, somebody or someone out there has given me a gift. It's a gift. And that gift I want to give to the world and say, look, it's free. Every Indian should be jumping on that.
It's free. It's free. Yeah, it's free.
It's not like you have to spend loads of money to do this.
No.
Do a few little changes here and there. But because society and media and lifestyle, people think it's really, really hard. And it's not. Just do some baby steps and you'll see the difference. I mean, again, I feel like Superman. Mm. And somebody will say to me, Sandy, you're full of beans and you've always had this passion for stuff. Yeah, and
full of something.
Yeah, full of something. But it's genuinely not. How can you not tell people? How can you hold on to a gift and not share it with the world?
And this is where we connected properly when we started talking about food. You just want to help people understand they can do this. Mm. You know, so you're cooking lives, showing them how they can make whatever it is. I mean, yes, you'll always come back to, can I have a curry? but, you know, you...
For the record, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say the spice guy. It's not the curry guy.
However, when he was here last week, I did make him make me a curry. It was a really good curry. But yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
But this is where we connected, was actually wanting to help people make a change to their own lives. Mm. Because, again, you know, we can't do it for people, but we can show them how to make food that's really interesting, really easy, using real ingredients. And it is a shame we have to sort of say we use real ingredients, because most of the stuff that's on the supermarket shelves isn't real. 90% of what's on a supermarket shelf isn't real food.
And I think the conversation we had earlier this morning when you picked me up from the train station, it's made me realize that Mark and I are specialists in what we do, and I've taken for granted that how easy stuff is to do.
Yeah.
But for the untrained or unfoodie, even the so-called foodie people I get to meet, I'm a foodie. they go to the Italian once a week and then have some Prosecco. No, you're not a foodie.
I think a lot of it is there's a fear of getting things wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when I make something, am I going to get it wrong? We always want to try and do something right first time. And it just doesn't happen. How many times have you made the very same curry or the very same dish and it come out differently?
Many times.
Yeah, almost every time. Maybe. It never works out exactly the same. You make a dish and you go, that was perfect. Try and recreate it. Because it's really hard. Mm-hmm.
Certain dishes, obviously, you can get pretty close to spot on. But then when you, again, going back to the questions I get asked on a regular basis, and it's there all the time, how do you make this? How do you do that? Yeah. Can I have a recipe? And genuinely, hand on heart, it's not because I'm being tight and I don't want people to know the recipes. The best way I can describe it is, yes, I can teach you. No, I can give you a fish and you can make yourself a nice fish meal, whatever it may be, fish and chips, cod mornay, whatever. But if I give you a fishing rod and teach you how to fish,
so
there's the difference.
Yeah.
There's the best analogy I could possibly give with this style of cooking. And my style of cooking is genuinely from the heart. But there are some rules. You wouldn't automatically pour in a tablespoon of salt in a dish because that would be wrong. Yeah. You'd know that's wrong.
Yeah.
There are some guidelines, but genuinely.
Yeah, so it's learning how to use the spices. It's learning sort of, you know, as you say, if you add a tablespoon of turmeric to a dish, it's going to taste sort of earthy and horrible.
Yep.
But if you add less is more.
Yeah. And must remind people that when we talk spices, it also includes what we call herbs as well. So your oreganos, thyme.
So this, this isn't just about chili and
curry
powder. It is about using, I mean, I use more herbs now, fresh herbs, than ever before. You know, because again, it's the flavor. You know, I made the slow cooked pork yesterday, and I've got sage growing in the garden.
Oh.
And I got a handful of sage, chucked it in the slow cooker. So the sauce, the stock that came out, just had this amazing fragrance of sage. And then I made a tomato sauce with it.
Brilliant.
Didn't have to add anything else to it. Just tomatoes, blitz it, and all the flavor was there.
But again, from the 90s, and this is where I understand the connection with what you're doing. But for me, before I met you, the thing is, I remember the food. So going back to Howard Reeves, I said to you, mentioned him earlier, and his mum being, or his grandma being the dinner lady. I remember eating breakfast in Howard's house, and she made everything with lard.
Yeah.
That breakfast, I can still taste it today.
Yeah.
It is the most unbelievable breakfast I ever ate.
I made sort of fish and chips a couple of days ago. Sweet chips, deep fried fish, all deep fried in lard.
Wow.
It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Cool. We're going to try and wrap this up with a quite succinct reason as to why we're now sat here. Why do we work together? Because we want to show people.
Oh, you work really. I love working with you because when I want to say
you hate working with me sometimes.
No, no,
Sandy. No. Why have you not cleaned up, Sandy? Why have you not weighed that, Sandy? He's like, oh,
no, genuinely, hand on heart. Right, I must admit, whenever we did do any functions together. And I got to say, you're going to make Mark go red or maybe slight grin. I don't know. I've never met anyone in my world who I completely have no problem leaving him to do the cooking aspect of the business. As you well know, ladies and gentlemen, I can talk for Queen and the country. So my skills are meeting and greeting. I am the meeter and greeter. And that's why the reason why I never got back in the kitchen, because every time I did a job, my bosses would say, Sandy, you need to be at the front. You need to be at the front. And I got sick of it. I could host, but the food was the love. But when I'm with Mark, I'm very, very confident that Mark does a superb job every time. And when I watch, when we do work together, we never talk in the kitchen.
Oh, God, no.
We never talk in the kitchen.
Get out of my kitchen.
We never talk. He's got Five Live on in the background, listening to you know who. And we just get on with it. And that is the beauty. We can talk now, but in the kitchen world, we don't even need to talk. We don't even need to look at each other. Yeah. It's just, he knows what I'm thinking and I know what he's thinking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, come on, score a goal.
Yeah. So we're working together, obviously. Yep. Now we're developing Keto and Spice, and part of that is we because people are obviously constantly asking you for recipes. Well, guess what? We're making him write stuff down, like dragging teeth.
Yesterday he was like, so I've got this right. Can I not just use like a handful? No. Can I not just use teaspoon? No. So, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday I measured everything out in grams, and it was painful, but I get it, I understand.
Yeah, so Keto and Spice is in production at the moment, which again is why we're sort of sat around a kitchen table and need to crack on making some food.
We do
because I'm getting hungry. Mm-hmm. And I've got some ideas of what you can make.
It's like every time I go, come on, dance, monkey, come on. Dance for me. Yeah, I've actually got a gun if I don't move fast enough on my chicken legs.
Oh, well, he can walk back to Leicester if he doesn't make me breakfast. but yeah, so Keto and Spice is a collaboration.
Absolutely.
Of our unique.
Well, you put it in the best analogy ever. Yes, you did, about what I bring to the table. You said something about something for the weekend.
Something for the weekend. that'll only hit a certain part of the audience.
Basically, I'm something for the weekend.
We have sort of specific talents or skills that we can bring to the book. As much as I've been in and around kitchens for 30 odd years, Sandy brings that something special. And I think that's what we can put in a book as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like to add that when Mark and I have worked together and I've shown him how to intricately put canapes together.
Oh, yeah.
He was fantastic. He didn't talk to me for like 6 hours, but he did it.
There's work to be done. Get out my kitchen.
Get out my kitchen.
Right. So we're going to crack on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Ella can cut about 3 minutes out of that hour.
Yeah, I think she can. But we're still usable. There's still a lot. We haven't still properly talked football and spice. I think that needs to happen.
Well, that'll be episode 31. So we'll give you a break for a little while. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, I don't know who we're going to have on, but we'll have somebody on with us. And hope you enjoyed it. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye.